This is the Paul Gough Audio Experience, whether you call yourself a PT, a physical therapist, or a physiotherapist. And wherever you're listening to this right now, this is for you. It is me revealing everything I can to help make you a more successful business owner. Thanks for listening. It means the absolute world to me. Welcome back to another episode of the podcast. It is amazing to be here. We are we're going to head to Leicester. We're going to head Leicestershire. Today we're going to talk to an amazing physio business owner from the UK. We're going to shine the spotlight on the United Kingdom. We're going to talk to Chris Stankiewicz. I'm going to talk all about his incredible success running his injury clinic over there in the middle of England. Before we do, a little bit of housekeeping. Big event coming up. We've got PPM Live today. If you are listening live today on Facebook or LinkedIn or YouTube, wherever you are, we have a deadline day for your seats today, the early bird booking link. Head over to ppmliveuk.com. We're going to have 100, probably 110 people in the room down there in London. So if you want to come to London, you're a UK physio business owner, sports injury business owner, rehab, any kind of injury. Basically, if you need somebody who's in a little bit of pain or doesn't move as well, and that's what you do, come to PPM Live in London, and we're going to be in New Jersey June 29th and 30th. Head over to paulgough.com/Jersey to find out more about the events. And it's the events where we get to meet people like Chris. And I'm going to talk to Chris in just a moment about his journey, his first event, and all of the success he's had over the last few years, both before Planet Paul, if you like, and since Planet Paul. So the events, we set the events up. The podcasts are where we sort of initially connect with people, but it's the events where we really make the difference, and it's fantastic to see people coming out to the events. So whatever your plans are this year, try and make it to London in June, and try and make it to New Jersey if you're on the more sunnier side of the Atlantic, shall we call it, and get to the New Jersey event. So Chris, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Paul. How are you?
Wonderful. How's life back in England? Tell me what I'm missing out on.
It's good. We've actually got some sunshine today, so I'm feeling that Florida vibe.
I don't believe you, Chris. I think you've just put two of those fancy light things on your desk, and it looks like
it's red light therapy. That's what it is, yeah.
There you go. Red light therapy. So tell us a little bit about your business and how you got started and when you got started.
Yeah, so we've got an injury clinic in Market Harbour, centre of Leicestershire, as you say, middle of the country, very affluent kind of market town, commuter link to London within under an hour. So nice sort of client base that we have here, keen to look after themselves and invest in their health. So that also helps to run a business. I got started, so the injury clinic actually started in January 2014, so just over 10 years ago. So just ticked over into our 11th year now. Just a one-man band from local rugby club, one room, and slowly grew from there. Came across yourself sort of late 2015, applied some new principles, and
did you really?
An accelerator program, late 2015. I came across the podcast. Yeah, it's a privilege to be on the podcast. I mean, I started listening to it for conversations like this on how people were succeeding. I've been completely cash based from day one. So I started listening. I remember I didn't have much work on at the time. I was sifting through Facebook, and I came across a most influential physiotherapy resources you should be looking at. And there was a business section. Yeah. And one of them on there was Jared Carter's Cash-Based PT podcast in the US. So I started listening to that, listening to all these American business owners who were going out of network and cash pay. And I thought, well, what are they all going on about? I'm completely cash pay. I've always been cash pay. Surely people just come and pay cash. So that was an eye-opener back then. And then one day, this English voice or a version of an English voice came on talking about the NHS and how the main competition is free. And I thought, this guy gets it. Obviously, clearly it was yourself. And from there, I found your own stuff and came into Accelerator in the January. Yeah, just coincided with us having the shock announcement that we were having a child, sort of 25 was at the time. Only been with Sophie about a year at the time as well. So, you can imagine. So that was really a case of, I need to press the button on this business now. I need to sort of make it do the next thing. We were living in a two-bed terrace rental that we thought, no, I need a roof over our heads if we're going to bring a child into this world. So, started applying your principles, been growing ever since. Outgrew that. We moved to a new premise in the centre of town where we took on space, and I've actually took Sophie on at that point, my wife, in customer service role, and we built three treatment rooms. So once upon a time, she was sat on the front desk and I was occupying three rooms.
Wow.
Because we had no other staff. Build it and they will come kind of principle. So we've grown from there. just over a year ago now, we took on the top floor, tripling the floor plan. We're up to 5 treatment rooms, rehab, gym, and a studio. So plenty of room to grow.
So how many staff, you got now?
We're 6. We're just about to take our 7th joining us next month.
Fantastic. So I'm going to pull you on a few things there. Mm. The pressure I've wrote down immediately there. The pressure. There'll be people listening to this and you think, yeah, you start your business, you take the rent on, and you move in with your partner, and you have a baby, and then you think, oh shit, I've got to do something now. And it's so true. If you look back at people's lives, the jumps that they have, it's often when the pressure's on and I've got to do something.
Yeah.
And when I get to see people, there'll be people listening to the podcast who have got no real kind of need, if you like, right? They're just nice. Like, business has been fine. And then all of a sudden the recession comes along, or the Medicare doesn't pay them for 3 months, or the competitor moves in across the street, or some circumstance changes in their life. And then all of a sudden their action changes, their behavior changes. The pressure sometimes actually forces the action that you need to do something. Believe it or not, now at this moment, when there's economic turbulence and high interest rates, recession, changes of governments on the horizon, all this stuff, it actually causes more people to do things. So somebody like what you've probably watched at our events, there's more and more people coming because people are getting off their asses and having to actually do something because the pressure's on them now. When it's nice and the sun shines and it's, you know, a nice 5 or 6 years in the economy, it's like, oh, I'll just trickle by and maybe next year. And then all of a sudden it's like, shit, I've now got to do something. So from a business owner, I think it's wonderful that you tap into the pressure. It's not a thing to run from. It's like you give yourself a lofty goal and you go get it, or you have a life circumstance and you think, shit, I actually want a bigger house now for my kids. I want to go and do that. I've applied the pressure to get me, if you like, to the next level. So I think that's amazing. So tell us a little bit more then about your model, your ideal client. You've obviously got a lot of different ancillary services going on. Who's your ideal client? Like, why did you pick that person? And what's it look like when I get into Chris's world? How I'm a client? How do I move through the system in Chris's clinic?
Okay, so yeah, we've got two probably main patient pops or avatars that we'll look at. So very much from yourself in the accelerator training, I vividly remember, you know, look at your clients.
What year did you do accelerator?
It was January 2016.
So you did 2016. There was a few years before we saw you again, wasn't it? Until you came back to London. Probably five or six, probably.
Yeah,
six
probably more. Then. Yeah, sort of dipped in and out of your world, various things, various programs.
So 2016, you did Accelerator. We taught you the concept of the, you know, who to go after. Who was that and why?
Yeah, so the perfect patient. So I remember you vividly saying, you know, look at the patients that you treat. The money may not be the ones that you want to treat or you like treating. I was seeing a lot of CrossFitters and young people at the time, which, you know, were hanging around for 2, 3, 4 sessions, kind of using it very much alongside their training. But then there was definitely this population, very similar to yourself, of over 50s, that, you know, valued their health and actually wanted to do something about it. They're involved in Pilates classes and, you know, working part time and, you know, going after that sort of mid-50-year-old lady that, you know, would send her husband and her mum and her kids and all that kind of thing. That's very much how we grew. Obviously, a very sporty area as well, commuter town, young professionals. We've also got that kind of triathlete, if you like, so serious enough about their sport that, you know, when they can't do it, they're very frustrated and, you know, want to get that help and then obviously that continued support after. So that's kind of the two-prong model that we kind of look at.
What happens when I get to your clinic then? Am I coming just for physio, or is there other things that I can buy?
Yep. So basically come in on two pathways. So you'll either come in what we call maintenance or the wellness side of things. So the sports massage, maybe some maintenance acupuncture, dry needling, that kind of thing. Or you're coming in on a pain pathway. So you're coming into initial consultation. Sometimes people will call us because they got a massage because they've got a pain, but they, you know, massage is all they know. They don't know what else to ask for. So when we get into it, we actually were very good at converting them into the initial consultation route instead. And then going through a plan of care from there, and hopefully off the back end of that, then staying around for further maintenance or wellness services.
I remember when I first started lead generation marketing in the clinic. So this will be 2013, 2014 now. And Vicky was the main girl who was on the phone. We were trying to get leads who opted in for information on Facebook or whatever. We were testing all these different lead magnets and books and things to get people to kind of raise their hand. And I remember one day we couldn't get this guy to commit. He just didn't like the sound of physio. And Vicky was selling him on physio, and she was talking about physio, and it was like physio, physio, physio. And I said, what's his problem? She said, oh, he doesn't think he needs physio. I said, tell him we'll give him a massage. So she rings him back and she says, look, why don't you come down for a massage? It's like, okay, cool, I'll come down for a massage. Like, who's going to do the massage? The physio. Yeah. And it was...
Change the offer.
Just change the offer, right? Don't overthink this. And it was one of the first, you know, this is the very early Paul when I'm starting to understand sales and psychology and influence and, you know, how people move and all of this type of stuff. And it made me think, God, like, we just overcomplicate this. And again, there's thousands of people who spend their entire life with no clue, like, no clue of one slight change of word that gets somebody to move. And once they've moved and they're on their way to the clinic and they come on down and they experience what you're about and they experience your love and your team and everything else, they don't even realize they're getting physio or sports injury therapy or osteopath, whatever it is. They don't care. You've just got that initial block. And your job as the business owner is to get me past that and the doubt and the fear and the false belief around sports injury or physio or whatever that gets me to come and sample it. And once I've sampled it, we all know that it's, you know, it's easy after that, but it's getting me over the line.
Yeah. It's getting to see behind the curtain, isn't it? You know, breaking those barriers down of what to expect and
I think meeting
so. The people and the place.
Yeah, I think so. And I think again, a thing that you've got to learn very early when you're entrenched in the world of physio, right? Again, you know, I don't know what you're like, but I know a lot of people like they go home at night, they're physios and they're on Twitter and they're on X or whatever it is these days. They're on Instagram and they're all in these Facebook groups and they're all in these like chats with other physios and life's about physio, which is wonderful. But you have to remember to step out of that as a business owner. If you're an employed physio, make your life about physio. But if you're a business owner in the world of physio or sports injury, whatever, you have to understand how a business operates. And for that to operate successfully, you have to understand the nature of the beast that you're dealing with, which is your clients, how they do think, how they do perceive physio, what the NHS has done to them and their view of anybody that looks like a physio, what a previous sports injury clinic has done for them that wasn't very helpful, that now they think about you, or a place that they went to for a nice relaxing massage that they have good memories and good experiences with, and they think, well, I just want that. Okay, well, we'll start you here, and then we'll slowly take you towards the step that we know you kind of need to be on, because you're going to need a little bit more than that. But we can't close you off just because you think you want a massage, and we're adamant that you get physio. It's like, well, let's just meet you where you are. Tell me a bit more about your team. And I started with the plan. I love this. And my researchers, I'm gonna call Lester my researcher. I said, tell me, what do you know about something really interesting about Chris? Obviously, I've been speaking to Luke, and he said, make sure you ask him about we set out to do annual planning. And on the day of annual planning, you went to talk to your head physio, is this right, about a potential pay rise and a, you know, moving forward, and he hands his notes in before you start the plan.
Yeah, yeah.
I just laughed. And I'm sorry, but I just think it's hilarious, right? Because this is what being in business is all about. Yeah. Tell me.
I've laughed about it a few times, Paul, believe me. I did a few other things as well, but eventually I laughed.
After you kicked the door in and you went, fuck, you started to laugh eventually. Yeah, tell us what happened.
Yeah, it's brilliant, actually. We just did our Q2 meeting this morning. So that was our Q1 meeting, 2nd of January. You know, a few months, you know, sat down with this individual, you know, the most senior person in the business. You know, tell me how they want to progress. You've got another young team coming in underneath them. So, right, this is going to be your role. You know, go away, think about the perfect role. Come to me with it. What do you think should be paid for that? Came back, yeah, we'll do it all. Not a problem. That fits what we're looking at doing. Agreed it day before Christmas, before we went on holiday. So I've done this whole presentation on what this new person's role is going to be, how it affects the team, plugging all the PowerPoint in, and the said individual rocks up with their notice. So threw the plan out the window. So it's been quite nice, actually. We look back at what went on in Q1, and I called it politely team restructuring and thrival, because we've come out looking better from it. So we've actually thrived, and just as we're speaking right now, we've just hit a record month. I've just seen it pop on the screen, record revenue, record appointment number. So you look at these things 3 months on and you can smile a little bit, but yeah, you've got to adapt. We've had to plan. We've hired three people in that time. Yep. One of them is about to join us. So actually, funny enough, on that same day, we had a new starter. So it's one's first day, one's last day.
Do you know, I'm going to keep talking about this with you. I'll show you an experience that I had, or whatever it was, January the 2nd. Obviously, public holiday in on New Year's Day. So January the 2nd, I come in and I bet you it's 9:16. I might have been 10:16 because everyone starts at 10:30 in the media office in the UK, and I was back there at the time. And this said individual walked in and said, "Have you got 5 minutes?" I said, "Come on."
It's
then.
Always "Have you got 5 minutes?"
Go on then. Right. And if it's a male, you know what's coming. If it's a female, possibly there's a pregnancy. It's like you're either pregnant or you're leaving. It's like it's usually that. Yeah. With this individual, it was like, "Come on then, let's just do it now. Let's just do it now because I know what's coming, and I can just get my head around it for the rest of the day." But I did kind of see this one coming, so it didn't really come as a surprise. But it was like, "Welcome to 2024." Like, you know, literally deal with that. But like the title of the podcast is like, "Everybody has a plan, then your head physio quits." It's the saying from Mike Tyson: "Everybody has a plan till they get in a ring with him." And it's like then he smashes them in the face. Like Logan Paul, or is it Jake Paul's fighting him in a few weeks? Jake Paul's probably got a plan to fight Tyson. Well, wait till he smashes you in the rib cage in the face, like harder than you've ever been hit. Let's see what your plan is when you get back up. And I think that's true of business. And my experience of working with clinics in the UK, right? So we separate this. I've got podcasts from podcast listeners all over the world, US and UK. In the US, it's quite common to grow a business with 10 or 12 staff. That's normal, right? That's not on out of the ordinary. It's common. Not common, but it's not unusual for somebody to have 10, 12, 15 clinics, right? We're talking to a clinic right now in New Jersey about our event in the summer, and they've got 19 clinics. Like, can we bring all of our directors? It's like, oh shit, that's pretty cool, right? But you imagine that in England, that's not normal to have 19 clinics, right? And equally in the UK profession, which is why I love highlighting the likes of your success. It wouldn't be that normal for somebody to have 6, 7, 8 staff and 2 locations. What's normal in the UK is a one-man band, one lady band, right? Solo practitioner with a part-time front desk, maximum a second or third therapist who's 10 hours here, 5 hours there, right? That's the typical business. So you're busting right through that, and you're going to be on pace for probably 10, 12 staff, 15 staff, 2 or 3 locations. But you have to get into a world of hurt with people. And I think that's the bit that most people are not comfortable with as physios. If they get their head around the treatment thing and they get a good reputation, then they have to do a bit more marketing. They kind of usually stop there. But even if they bust through that, the bit that they don't like is the people thing. So I'm all about any questions or anything we can talk about today, how you've busted through this people thing. Once you get to 6 and 7, it's like you're on your way to 10 and 12. So talk to us a little bit more about your team and your people and just how you've embraced your leadership role, if you like, at your clinic.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the people challenge, as I'm sure most people listening to this, is the challenge to try and overcome or certainly manage. We've got a nice team at the moment culturally. So you spoke in Orlando, I think it was about top 10 attributes of A players or something like that. And the one that jumped out and slapped me right in the face was coachability. Yeah. I scanned across my team in my brain. I went, we've got some, we haven't got it all. The last three we've hired all on coachability, and my God, does it show.
Yep.
We've now actually, I said that the therapist that left on 2nd of January was the last of the old guard, if you like, you know, old dog, new tricks and all that kind of thing. So we've now got a completely fully bought in team to the process, what we're trying to do. Culturally, we're very good. They're very close. We had a good laugh today and learned some stuff along the way as well. But they're coachable, they're listening, they're learning, and we're already, you know, we had a look at, you know, have we upskilled in the last 3 months since we had that bad day? And what I said to you, know, if we can keep the main theme of that was, you know, kind of these marginal gains of 1%, you know, how can we keep leveling up 1% at the start of the year? And also looking at the patient life cycle, the patient journey as a team effort. So whose role and responsibilities at each stage to get the success for that patient. So everyone's kind of bought into that. So we recapped on that today. And we looked at, you know, how have those 1% gains added up in 3 months? Where are we now? As I say, it's culminated in hitting a record month this month with a new therapist. Just joined us her first month, and she's hit 55% capacity. So not even month anywhere one, near where we need her. So the fact that that's a record month is brilliant, and it shows that the staff are engaged and are kind of following out what, you know, that plan of care as we want it done, really. So coachability's been probably the biggest thing. It was Tom actually in Orlando at the Ultimate CEO competition.
CEO presentation.
That jumped out at me, and he said, "I thought I was a bad leader until I could find people I could lead," and that was definitely me. So there were two things I left with in my mind: was find people that are coachable and find the ones I can lead. And touch wood, is the best it's been right now. So
I think
I'm not naive enough to think it's going to stay that way, but it's a good start.
Well, this is going to be a good conversation. It doesn't stay that way, but you do, right? So this is the differentiator, is that your people will evolve, they will change, their priorities will change. Some of them, I've had said individuals who have been with me for 3 to 5 years, who are wonderful, brilliant employees for that 3-4 year window. And they didn't become bad employees, their life priorities changed. They entered a new phase of their life. They were, if I'd have employed that guy, girl 15 years ago, I might have got them for 10 years. But because I got them at that phase of their life with these extra things going on, kids, divorces, wives, husband issues, whatever, right? Like their priorities change. And ultimately, that's what you are managing all day. You're managing somebody who ideally their priorities and their goals and their values are aligned at that time, but theirs change. Yours evolves as you evolve and what you want and you know what you know to be true about your life. Yours stays pretty consistent. And that's the thing that you've got to cling to as you grow your business, that you change. And the worst thing that I see happen in businesses where because you lose a few people, you think, oh, I need to change and I need to stop being this. It's like, no, you need to double down and be more of that person and attract more of the people that do want to be around a Chris that has this type of value or this type of belief about life or business. They need to get behind that. But it doesn't mean that they stay forever with you, and nor should it be your mission to try and get somebody. Yeah. Your job really, this phrase got taught to me recently, your job is to create a leadership factory. And if you understand that, right, if you set out to create a leadership factory where Chris is going to create an environment, a factory like mill-like process in the business that develops leaders, where every leader has to be responsible for themselves and like must be able to lead themselves. And that's a phrase that I've introduced in my teams. You don't have to manage people and you don't have to always be a leader of 4 people, but you must be a leader of 1. And if you run that filter, everybody listen to this, run through your business that filter of, have I got somebody in my team who can't even lead themselves? That's your weakest link. That's your problem. And that person needs to be removed from the business. So I get it, Sally, you don't like the responsibility of managing these 3 people. I get that. But you have to be able to lead yourself. Because if I have to lead you and I have to keep dragging you, there's too much energy there for me being used in that situation. And that's been one of the game changers for me in the last 6 to 12 months, running everybody through the filter of, can this person lead themselves? Because I'm not here to walk you off a cliff every week. And I'm not here to drag you back from, you know, stress or worry every single week. You're in the wrong job, guy, like, or whatever. So I think that's important for you to keep managing as you grow your business. And the second thing that you brought up there, which I think is important for people to hear. I live, as you know, 8 months of my life in Florida and I live 4 months in the UK. So I've lived in both countries and I've bounced between both, even in the last 6 years. So I'm aware culturally of both countries is what I'm saying. And what I realize in the UK is that there's a very, very closed off mindset for being coachable, right? Here in the US, it's whether it's because of Tony Robbins or Zig Ziglar and like these like legends of the self-development world, that like the Think and Grow Rich crowd, the Napoleon Hill, like, these guys go back decades, right? We didn't have that in England. Like, Tony's getting bigger there, and like they'll have never heard of Zig Ziglar, but like there'll be many people listening to this podcast whose parents were subscribed to that type of book or that type of thinking in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, right? So it became culturally accepted here to be coachable, and like if you didn't have a coach, like, what's wrong with you? Like, it's that type of like mindset. Whereas in the UK, I think we're very stoic and we're very skeptical, and that's your advantage as a business owner, as in we can get ahead so far because nobody else wants to do it. But equally, for somebody who is that closed off, it's a problem for them. Like, because they'll never, and this is where I'm going with it. You're coachable, right? You've invested in coaching since 2016. You're listening to podcasts. You're on flights with your family to events in Orlando and London and whatever else, right? You're coachable. You will attract people who want to be coached. When you have a business owner that wants a successful business without being coached, he by definition or she by definition is never ever going to be able to coach the subordinates, right? The people underneath, the team, the whatever you call them, right? Like, they're never ever going to be able to be coached because the person at the top also isn't coachable. And that's where most businesses in the UK stagnate. The business owner's mindset is closed. It's stoic. It's skeptical. It's like frozen, it's stuck in it. I got my degree at college and I'm good now. And they've now got these 1 or 2 people and no change happens because ultimately there's been no change in the business owner. The coachable business owner invariably ends up going back to their business to coach others one or two things happen. The people in the office think this is amazing and I want to be coached more by Chris because Chris is on this journey now and I'm going to come with Chris. Or they go, fuck this. I'm not interested in any of this shit. I'm going back to Starbucks. I'm going back to McDonald's or I'm going back to work for the council, which I always say to my staff, if you don't want to be fucking go and work for the fucking council and sit there for 35 fucking years, right? Sit and see how much fun that is. Like, it's a lot more fun being coached than it is sitting there for the next 35 years waiting for your fucking pension, basically. Open for a 2% pay rise if the government decide to give you it. But that's the mindset. And those are genuine things in different countries that when you understand, actually, sometimes that's Britain's problem and Britain's challenge is it's just not cool to do that. Like, it's like, oh, it's some thing that you're going to lose your money. And it's like, oh, they're selling on you and all this sort of shit. It's like, actually, no, I'm quite interested in developing myself. Thank you. And if I develop myself, then I can develop my team. And if I develop my team, then I'm going to have a good organization that's going to make some decent money. So hats off to you for doing that. So tell us a little bit more about your meeting you've just come out with then. If you don't, what can we learn from your Q2 meeting? What was the challenges that you faced in Q2? How did you in Q1? How did you overcome them? Tell us a little bit.
So obviously, the major challenges were capacity, kind of galvanizing. Yeah, good challenge. We've been turning work away. Also, we were hiring in that time as well. Getting the existing team to kind of galvanize and just go that little bit of extra mile, just to make sure that we are seeing the clients at the frequency we need to see them and the volume that we need to see them. And actually hit some records along the way as well. We had our lowest cancellation rate for a month, not last month, month before during that period. So
what are you doing there then differently? If you're having your best month for something as tangible as cancellations, what are you doing? What did you stop doing and start doing to get that?
We started doing what I've been trying to do for a long time. And we look at that patient journey. I think getting the team to understand that it's there's a flow of the client throughout the business at different stages and people responsible for different things. And then actually communicating that it's a journey and not that one session fix to the client as well. Also there's a bit of scarcity in there as well, you know, getting to book several sessions ahead so we can actually organize the diary better, help people stick in the diary as well. So there's some small kind of like tactical things like that. But I think the overriding principle was, you know, understanding the journey better as a team and our roles and responsibilities within that journey.
What do you do specifically then, tactically, what does your week look like? How do you get, I've got seven people in my team. I've got seven people in my team. How do I get my staff to buy into this concept of a patient journey, not fixed in the mindset of a person walks through the door for a treatment session, gets a rub, gets a stretch, and off they go? What do you do?
We start, the thing we implemented, I think something I've been trying to get in for a while, a few various people in the business was struggling to get it in, but we got it in around August time last year, was a Monday morning meeting. Just 30 to 45 minutes on Monday morning where we kind of review the week before, what went well, what didn't go well, and then, you know, what we're going to do going forward from there for the week. So in there we review, you know, where are we on track in terms of cancellation rate, number of cancellations they're creeping up, you know, what's happening there. Is it that we've just got a long waiting list and people are dropping off because they're waiting too long? So something we did there was drop the initial consultation time down from an hour to 45 minutes to get people in slots to get the journey started. It may not be the service we want to give, but it's the, you know, getting therapy, the mindset, it's not the service you want to give, but it's far better getting them started on that journey than it is them dropping off because they've waited too long. So things like that. And I guess Adol's classic is, you know, what you measure gets done. And that, you know, there's a few key metrics that me and Luke identified that if we can get those on point and keep addressing those, then we can make some real changes in the business. So it's a little bit of getting people into the business and we're doing that from the off rather than trying to get people to change their behavior in the business. I'd say is where we've really accelerated recently.
You mentioned metrics. What's the number one metric that you watch every week?
Cancellation rate's the biggie. Cancellation rate and diary efficiency. So percentage of diary books.
I agree on that. I think, again, a big lesson, I know we spoke about this recently on a UK mastermind call, was the idea of somebody's chief job in the office is almost chief diary engineer. Like, it's every single day making sure that like two sessions that are available for the rest of the day, how do I fill them? Because that day goes, Chris has lost his money. And somebody with the energy and the passion to kind of move lists, move names, knowing that there's probably going to be, of 20 people who could come in today, there's always two and it's always these two who cancel. but I've got three patients on a wait list. How do I get them in? How do I move them there? I've got this patient booked in for Friday, but we know she's very flexible. Can I call her today and see if she'll come in tomorrow?
Exactly what we spoke about today. I think it was a call. I don't know if it was a UK call or a US call that you were doing, but Nash asked the question, you're answering him, and you talked about this non-urgent wait list and the penny just dropped. I was like, that's exactly it. You know, we do treat a lot of retired people. We do treat a lot of people that work from home that we can slide slots. So very much been talking about that today and how do we, you know, sort of increase that diary efficiency going forward. You know, so we spoke about specifically, we talked about if it doesn't need to be an hour, you know, again, different solutions for different problems. If it doesn't need to be an hour initial, can it be a 45? Can we start that journey sooner so we can plug those spots? No point having someone sat there 45 minutes and somebody on a wait list because we're waiting for an hour to come available to see them. We talked about this non-urgent wait list and moving people around that could be flexible. And what else did we talk about? There was one more in there. It's evading me at the moment. Oh, we talked about a multiple therapist approach. So Phil does this really well, actually. I went over to Phil's clinic in Solihull the other day, sat in with his team, and they do this multi-therapist approach, and the way they communicate to their clients that they will be seen by multiple members of the team really helps with kind of clogging and bottlenecking the diary. We haven't gone the full extent that he's doing it, but it's very much like, can you hand off for 1-2 sessions to somebody and communicate that in order to get that person seen rather than dropping off because they knew they should have been seen in a week, but they've had to wait 3 weeks or be on a wait list, that kind of thing. So it's kind of getting our therapist into the mindset of it's okay but for several people to have eyes on this person as well, and kind of, or maybe we're looking at doing it more stages of the journey. So the girl we're just taking on has got a master's in strength conditioning as well. So she can do the back end stuff really, really well. Perfect. So if we need to unload your diary, right, I've got the perfect girl for you to move to. She's got master's in there. She's going to take you through your rehab for the next 6 weeks. Move her over. So that's what we're talking about at the moment.
What about referral sources? What's your top one or two referrals? Where do you get your main stream of patients coming in from?
Word of mouth.
I was just going to say, you're not allowed to say word of mouth.
I am in this context because I'm going to bring Dan Kennedy into it. So, very much we've talked about today is managing the referral. You know, he said in Cleveland, which I wrote down and presented today, was you want a referral source, not a sales force. So, dictating the language and the medium that the people come in at. So, we created a few resources. We talked about how we're sending that out.
Great. So this is more where I wanted to go then. If we're going to say word of mouth, I love word of mouth. What I don't like is the lazy business owner's view of word of mouth is that I rely upon my reputation, right? Which candidly is, you know, how big's your ego? What do we do to drive word of mouth? How do we increase word of mouth referrals coming into the business? That's probably the bigger question then. So what are we doing around that?
So I've got, I wrote the back pain book at Christmas. I released that start of the year. So I've been giving that out. We sell it in the clinic, but I'll be giving it out to people who've mentioned that the family members got back pain, that kind of thing. And the guys give that out. We've got some of the resource. I'm just putting together a full resource pack that's got testimonials and things in there to kind of communicate our message the way that we want it to be communicated.
Love it. Passive and active. So passive is I'm sitting waiting. Active is, and again, this is Dan 101, one of the very early things I learned from Dan. Active referrals. So you're doing something consciously in the office. The book. So it's an interesting one. How do you get if I was to sit here and say, well, I get most of my clients through referrals, my worry is somebody listens to this and goes, oh well, I'll just sit and wait for referrals, right? I'll just sit and wait. I'll just keep being a great physio and I'll get on another shoulder course and I'll join some fucking ACL rehab weekend thing and that'll get me more referrals, right? It doesn't and it won't. The referrals come from the activity that is going on in your clinic, which is write the book, write the referral pack, the testimonial brochure, the offers, probably the workshops or whatever you're doing, which people are talking about, that is causing them to give you a call because you're top of mind awareness rather than just, hey, there's a business card. There's this referral pack, referral box, whatever it is, book. However many of those books can I give out? Give out as many as you can. There's one, Dan would always say, give two, one for the patient and one for the patient's friend. Please give this to somebody. Write down to what's their problem, back pain. Great, fold up chapter 10 and put a little inset in at chapter 10 and go out, you know, dear Dave, go straight to 10. Read the book. All of that is what I would call active referrals, which is genius and is still the best way to do it. But it is from the books and the material and everything else that you're creating in your business.
Yeah, definitely. That's been my goal this year is to kind of get out from behind the brand. I've always kind of hidden behind the name a little bit. And I'm coming out this year and go that authority-based marketing of, this is what we're about. This is what we do. This is the level we're at, really. So, going out of my comfort zone a little bit this year and enjoying it as well.
Good for you. Tell us about your second business. What's going on with you and your wife in the business there?
Second business. Yeah, you can blame Jez for this one. We got into the cosmetic laser business July last year. So we're still in the first year of that. But again, that only came from being in the headspace to be able to have a second business as well and have time for family and things. And that all came from your teachings, Paul. So, so we run a cosmetic laser business from the clinic in the expanded space that we expand into. So that runs almost part-time, basically, in one of the rooms. And we offer pain-free laser hair removal, skin pigmentation removal, threadbane removal, that kind of thing. Tapped into the clinic client base as well, particularly that middle-aged 50-year-old lady and her family. So, it's working quite nicely at the moment.
Tell me what you meant by headspace.
I'm sure you've had this where you've got lots of things going on and you're paralyzing your own brain from being able to handle it anymore. I've never been able to set up a second business previously, with dealing what I was doing. A little bit of time, I've stepped back from treatment as well. I'm 2 days a week clinical now, so that gives me time to work on the marketing for another business and things. But yeah, just in emotional resilience as well, I've probably got over the years as well, which has allowed me to deal with turbulence and things like that and chaos.
I think it's a big thing, again, that businesses at the beginning think as you get bigger, it gets easier. As you make more money, it gets easier. And it's the absolute opposite. You've probably heard me talk about this a lot on mastermind calls recently. But there's this absolute fallacy that as your business gets bigger, it's going to get easier. It doesn't, right? And you have to find a way to tap into other areas. One of the things that I've had to learn to deal with, right, and I think I went through this. I went through this as a physio business owner, but this, like, obviously now, like, this is on a global scale for me, and there's like significant 10x customers, and it's such a much bigger playing field that you're playing with the media business that I do now. You have to learn to live with being imperfect, and you have to learn to live with the imperfections of it not being done right by you. If that makes sense, you're early, like 5 years in business. And I think that's a little bit of the headspace that people can't get freed from. Your first 3 to 5 years is like you're so used to everything being right and every customer being happy and every patient saying great things about Chris and like bumping into somebody in a pub that you'd fix their back and it was like, oh, Chris, I love you. And then you'd go in a restaurant. I don't know about you, but I used to avoid going in the end. You're just so sick of seeing people. And like me and Natalie's relationship, we live in Hartlepool. Anybody who's from England who knows the geography, we lived in Hartlepool at the time. And we used to drive to Durham or Newcastle every Friday and Saturday, Sunday, because I just got sick of like going to a pub and seeing a patient or like having to talk about back pain or something. So you became a victim of your own success, right? But like looking back on it, I think the problem is you think that that's your identity of getting everything right for everybody every time. But as your business gets bigger, you have to start to learn to love and be okay with imperfection. Because you're going to employ 5 people that are going to not be on point every day and they're going to make a mistake and they're going to mess up a treatment plan or they're going to mess up a X or Y or whatever it will be, or they're going to let you down or themselves down. And you have to learn to deal with that. And I think that's the bit that people can't break through. Back to it's the coachability again of if I can be around groups and I can see that people are making mistakes and I can see that people get things wrong, but they're going to drive forward anyway. And I can develop my own resilience to rejection of a client saying no or a 1-star review or whatever it'll be over the years. Like I look at you 11 years in business and it's like, that's an overnight success to some people. They listen to this and go, wow, like Chris has done amazing. And look at this now. And I bet your family will be thinking, oh, our Chris, he's done fantastic. And it's all happened for him. And all of a sudden they start going, oh, Chris, you've got a successful business. You're like, yeah, but I've for 11 years, I've dealt with shit and had to, put up with this or that or the other. So you keep carrying that forward with you is what I'm saying. You got to keep bringing that resilience and that learning to overcome obstacles and challenges actually becomes, and this is where I was going with it, it's as the business gets bigger, it's not always as fun and it's not always pleasurable as it was. And this is how I wrestle with this weekly. Like back in the day, it was so easy and so much fun on both scales of both businesses to a degree. And then all of a sudden it's like there's shit everywhere. It's just like there's a problem here and there's a staff quit and there's a client who's kicking off for like the same thing that you did for the client the day before, loved it. And then like somebody else in a different country, like, nah, I don't like this. And it's like, it's too American. I'm like, all right. But in America, it's like, it's too English. It's like, well, what the fuck? What is it? Like, which way do you want us to be? Right. But you just learn to, you learn to dance with it and you learn to love something else. And it isn't as pleasurable. It isn't as fun. And there is more challenges and there's more pain and there's more like, fuck. But it's more rewarding. And it becomes more personally rewarding. And the strength that you get from yourself as you deal with problems head on and you make the big calls and you fire people and you hire people and you raise the prices, you cannibalize your business model, you start a new service that flops, but you try something else and off you go again. In the end, it becomes more rewarding. So let that be a little lesson to everybody. It's been my experience that it's not as fun and not as pleasurable as it gets bigger. It can definitely be more money, but it's going to be more rewarding because of the journey that you're on. And I suspect that's probably what'll happen to you. There'll be more, I did that. Like, I've achieved that. Look what I've built. Look at my book. Look at the building. Look at the staff I employ. Look at payroll. Wow, I'm proud of that. Look at 17 people are off the government's fucking, out of the government's hair basically because of me, right? And that's what I mean. It's more rewarding because of those things. And as your kids grow up and they get to watch you going into work every day, it's like, that's what it in the end becomes about. Not necessarily the pleasure that you get from being perfect, every minute of the day. What's the best or biggest thing? You've obviously been around for a while, 10, 11 years in the Planet Paul kind of ecosystem. What's the biggest thing you've learned from anything I've ever taught you? Books, Christ. Masterminds. This put you on the spot. I always, this is my own ego getting satisfied. What's the biggest thing? What's the one thing that you think, that changed that?
There's so much. I've really leaned into it.
I mean, we can sit here and do 10 if you want. Like, that'll be good.
I mean, I think the main one, if I'm looking at it as success as a person, i.e. family and business, is, I remember I was actually on the way to a Forest game. I stood on a train listening to you. And I remember trees whizzing past the window as you said it. And it was about work-life balance. And that balance isn't a grenier thing, it's a zoomed out thing. You know, zoom out and look at the year. You know, I've had the families with the kids. You know, one week I might need to be in the business more. One week I might need to be at the family more. And it was that feeling of guilt either way and actually not enjoying either because you're too busy thinking about the guilt on the other end of things. You know, recently I've given myself a few deadlines in the business. I've had to work a few weekends in my office. And then little boy wants me to go do something with him. But on the flip side of that, last weekend I spent the weekend at Legoland with him. Because I got that stuff done and I enjoyed both and I was present for both. So that's kind of, I think, if I was looking at a personal thing of what success is to me, it's finding that balance and actually look back every New Year's Eve and go, you know, did I achieve that balance this year? Did I get everything I wanted to do in the business and did I do everything I wanted to do as a family? Yeah. Have I been who I needed to be in each role? And that's probably the biggest thing I'll carry forward with me.
Good. I love that. I think
those, not so tactical, but high level.
those types of things are the most important to me in my role as a teacher, mentor, whatever. It's the there's people whose podcasts will just be all about money and crank out more money. And like, honestly, I could sit here all day and talk about that type of stuff where you just sit there and treat 100 patients. And, you know, most of the people listening to this podcast, if you want to get rich, just sit and crank out 25, 30 patients every single day, right? But your health's probably not going to be great. Your back's going to hurt. Your knee's going to hurt. Your hands are going to be fucked. I mean, I took me 7 years and I'm like, this is definitely not going to end well if I'm not careful before I realized it. You're probably not going to have flexibility and freedom. You'll be bored as shit. You're a factory worker. So when you realize that actually I could make all the money if I wanted, but I want it both. I want everything. And why shouldn't I have it? I want the right amount of money in order for me to live the life. Now that could be, I'm making this up. For you, it could be 150 grand. For somebody else listening to this, it's 250 grand. Somebody else thinking, fuck this, Paul, I want $500,000. Great. But we have to find what's right for you and what level of income that you need to live the life that you want with the freedom that you want and the gap between credit card bills and 3 trips to Portugal or credit card bills and a month in Australia or whatever it is, right? We need that daylight between survival and having a really fucking good time while you're here, which I'm sorry, you need a bit of money to do that. Like, you can watch, what's the phrase I wrote in the book, you can watch the safari on fucking Netflix or you can get on the elephant yourself, like in the Jock Safari Lodge up down there in South Africa. The safari on the fucking elephant is significantly more fun and a better experience than sat at home watching it on Netflix, but you need a bit of cash for that, right? So we have to find a way to balance the ambition and the business and everything else that is like who Chris is and part of his identity. But equally, we've got this family thing that we need to bring into it. And we've got this, in my case, travel bug that I love to go and experience and be with my kids. And I've got a, developed a very expensive habit of big football games and basketball games, and I need a bit of cash for that, right? Because being at the basketball game and courtside is significantly more fucking fun than watching it on my iPhone, right? Like, it is. But if I can figure out a way to get my kids to come and do all of this stuff with them, because of the business and because of the flexibility that that created for me, well, that's why what we're in with business, I think it's the most magical thing on earth, because you can get both. Like, you can earn a lot of money as a doctor or as a lawyer, but fuck me, I wouldn't swap. I would not swap in a million years for the pressure and the stress and the rigidness that those guys are stuck in for 40, 50 years of their life. Whereas business owner, if you go at it and you go out with the intention of making some money and setting up, I need 250. But I also want to wrap around this type of other things, then you can absolutely do it. There's just not many people who dare to do it, because it's always about the almighty dollar, like leading, which, you know, that's right in a way, but there is definitely a way to do both. And I think, to give you something I've learned recently on that topic to close this out, if you look back on your year, and you've hit the target with the kids, and you knocked off. In January, I said, I want to do these six things with the kids. I want to take them to watch England in the summer at the Euros. I want to do this, I want to do the other. Boom. If I look back at January, in the cold light of day, I knocked off those six or seven things. Well done. And if I said my business needed to make X, Y, Z, and I knocked it off, or I got 10%, well done, Paul. And if I said I needed to improve that relationship with my mom or brother or whatever, and I did, then I got a little bit better. Well done. Do you know what I mean? Each of those things, if you like, that you go down is going to get significantly better, and you're going to have a good year. And all you're going to do is every year look back and think, I'm growing, I'm getting more successful, as time goes on. And it isn't always just about the bigger purpose of your life. It's about the purpose of everything you do. That makes sense. Because everybody, again, the narrative on social media is, oh, what's the purpose? And what's your purpose? And live your purpose. It's like, well, why don't we bring purpose to everything that I do? Like, my little boy is just coming, he's asleep there, but it's like, does he know every day that he's loved? Does he know every day that daddy loves him? Does he know every day that he's special? Does he know every day that he's valued? Is he noticed? Because if I just keep dreaming about the bigger thing in my life, the house or the business, whatever, what my purpose is, to serve all these people, great. But how do you know you've done that? Like, there's so many things that we can bring purpose to. Natalie or the kids or me or my mom or whatever, like, there's just ways that we can bring purpose to my job at this point, purpose to this podcast, to inspire somebody, to help somebody just see things a little bit differently. Let's just bring all of the passion and the energy to this podcast. The purpose is to inspire one person. Great. I've got Chris on the podcast today to inspire one other guy sat somewhere in England who goes, fuck me, I want this. I'm off. I'm next. And I think if you live like that, all of a sudden in your office, it'll be to inspire one person in your team to be the next manager, to inspire one patient to live more healthily, to inspire your brother, your aunt, your uncle to be more successful in their business. You think, shit, I've got a really cool life here. Like, and I've really got purpose to my life over and above just this big theoretical bullshit thing that everybody talks about. So I think you can have that one. That's another one I've learned.
Love it.
More recently, but it's still needs you to be a successful business owner and the skills and all of that thing, because that at the end of the day is the vehicle for you to be successful. Natalie's just locked herself out of the room. She's brought me a coffee. This is how loved I am. Natalie's walked in. You'll have to wait. Get the keys. I'm on a podcast. This is live. Natalie's walked in. So I've got my little boy who's asleep in his little pushchair thing in his whatever it is, and she's brought me a nice coffee. So she's obviously gone out of the toilet and locked herself out because she now can't get back in, so she's currently knocking on the door. So that's what's going on in my world right now. I'd like to say that this was a professional recording studio and it was all locked down, but it isn't. So last thing, biggest goal next 12 months, what are you going for, what are you shooting for?
Ooh. No, I'm not going to lie. This year is about making money. We've invested quite heavily over the last few years, and we take what we need to live on as a family. Now I want to make some profit beyond what we need. Was the phrase, more money than month would be nice. Now, you know, it's what we're in it at the end of the day for. And then, yeah, maybe start diversifying into other things with that income as well. So, yeah, it's all about growth in terms of growing the team, growing our capacity, growing the amount of people we can help, but ultimately, it's growing bottom line as well for us this year.
Good for you. it's always, always should be factored in. Don't keep kicking that profit thing down the can. It's like, get the business to a successful unit and entity as fast as you can. Get a little bit of cash coming in for you, but then it's start to go, how do we get daylight? Like, that's the thing. There's profit and then there's clear daylight. There's like profit I can enjoy or live off, but then there's clear daylight. And that's the fun stuff. And that's the stuff that you can do that makes business being, worthwhile, if you like. So, London, see you in London.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Bringing any staff? You coming on your own? You bringing some staff?
I couldn't on my own. Soph might be there. It's her birthday and her sister's 40 if they're born on the same day, 7 years apart. So got some duties back here, but she's seen if she can make it. So it might be me and Soph, if not just me.
Fantastic. What about Florida this year? We're coming back to Florida. Obviously, you came to PPM Live last year.
Yeah, that's the goal. That's on the board, whiteboard in front of me. 1st of January every year, Florida's on there.
So there you go. So that's your biggest goal, to get your kids back to Florida this year.
October, yeah, definitely. I'll see you post every weekend.
October the 18th, I think it is this year, isn't it? 18, 19.
Yeah, you said it was towards the end, yeah.
Yeah, October, just before the British school holidays, yeah. We'll have to meet up this year, because I think I was just leaving, I think, wasn't I, the day after?
Yeah, you were off to Boston last year.
You were in celebration, yeah, I was going off to Boston, so we'll catch up this year. I'll take you off for dinner. I'll take you to the tavern, it'll be great. I'll come round for a nice pool day. That'll be fantastic. So where can people find out more about? Tell us your website and your social handles for people to follow.
Yeah, so we're the Indra Clayton Market Harborough.co.uk. Very long-winded email address. And handles are at the Injury Clinic MH.
At the Injury Clinic MH. Cool, I'll put all of that in the show notes. Chris, you've been amazing. Thank you. It's a wonderful story. There's more depth to it than I think even I realized, which is why I love doing these podcasts. You really get to delve into the story and track the journey and kind of find myself a little bit in it. The 10, 11 years and dragging your family to Florida to events and all that type of stuff. It's fantastic. You're doing amazing. Well done.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks for your time. Pete, you're here. Cheers, Chris. See you soon.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to Paul Gough's audio experience. If you're brand new to Paul's world, head on over to paulsmarketingbook.com, where you can get started with his number one best-selling marketing book for physical therapists. Or if you've been listening to the show for a while, you like what you hear and you think that you could benefit from this type of help to accelerate the growth and profitability of your practice, reach out to Paul's team at paul@paulgough.com and tell us exactly what you're looking for. And by the way, if you know someone who would benefit from today's show, please share it with them. And if you've got any questions that you want answered, tweet Paul at the Paul Gough using the hashtag AskPG. You can also find all of these details over in today's show notes. All right, until next time, have a wonderful day.